Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Canon breaks can be a hard pill to swallow in Star Trek, and there are so many different examples of things changing throughout the franchise. Gene Roddenberry was selective when it came to what was and what wasn't lockdown lore. He initially didn't count there to be an ongoing continuity between the original series and the Next Generation, not to mention the animated series, meaning that rules could simply change as he saw fit. With that in mind, I'm Sean Ferrick for Trek Culture, and here are 10 times Star Trek broke its own rules. 10. The Romulan Battlecruiser. The Enterprise Incident. The issue actually occurs due to production timelines. The Howard Anderson Company were tasked with the visual effects for both this episode and Ilan of Troyes, both which featured the D7 battlecruiser. This episode was written to tell the story of the Pueblo incident, in which an American crew were taken prisoner and held for almost a year accused of espionage after wandering into North Korean waters. Thus, this episode was aired first. The D7 class was a Romulan vessel, rather than a Klingon one in terms of appearances. Spock does note that the Romulans are using Klingon designs now, but this is something of a gaffe in the schedule, really. 9. James T. Kirk versus James R. Kirk. This has got to be one of the more well-known issues with an established fact. In Where No Man Has Gone Before, Gary Mitchell ascends to godlike powers after coming into contact with the Great Barrier. More on that one later. Unable to allow him to continue down this path due to the danger he poses, Kirk plots to bring Mitchell to a far-off world and maroon his old friend there, keeping him safely away from any other human life. This goes about as well as you'd expect, and the two men end up facing off against one another. In the foray, Mitchell presents Kirk with his own grave, bearing the name James R. Kirk. Over the years, they've attempted to explain this away by saying that Mitchell simply made a mistake. But the fact is that the animated series was the first mention of Tiberius being Kirk's middle name, confirmed later in Star Trek VI: The Undiscovered Country. As Mitchell was the only one who ended up in the grave, it's best just to think about it as a nickname for this once great man. 8. The Size of the Milky Way. The premise of Star Trek Voyager is that the ship is hurled 75,000 light-years away from the Federation, which means it will take them the better part of a century to get home. Thus begins their 75-year exodus back to the Alpha Quadrant. However, they should have checked their history books, because the original USS Enterprise could cover vast distances in a fraction of the time. The first example comes in the second pilot, Where No Man Has Gone Before. In this episode, the barrier that surrounds the edge of the universe is reached in a matter of minutes by the ship, though, of course, various hijinks ensue. Later, in Star Trek V: The Final Frontier, the USS Enterprise A makes the journey to the center of the galaxy, again in a fraction of the time it takes Voyager to get home. Either Starfleet managed to regress its warp technology by the time that the Intrepid-class ship was launched, or the writers hoped the audience would just quietly forget these earlier incidents. 7. No Unauthorized Phasers. This one's a little up in the air, while at the same time really obvious. In Star Trek VI: The Undiscovered Country, Valeris fires a phaser to remind Chekhov that no one can fire an unauthorized phaser on a starship. In the same film, two crewmen are killed by phaser fire with the phaser set to stun at close range. If we take then that the rule to stun is fine, but the maximum setting isn't, why was this rule abandoned going into the Next Generation, when there are multiple instances of phasers being fired without any alarms going off? For example, when Lore shoots Dr. Crusher in Data Lore, or on Voyager, when the ship is repeatedly invaded. For the latter, perhaps intruder alerts circumvent these alarms. Seems a pretty poor design flaw, really. As it stands, it looks like this hard and fast rule, given such an excellent depiction in Star Trek VI, stands out from the established canon of the franchise. Though, for the safety of the crews out there, it is perhaps a rule they should bring back and enforce. 6. Scotty's memories. In Star Trek Generations, Captain Kirk is presumed killed while on board the USS Enterprise 1701B during the mission that saw it encounter the Nexus. He rushes to Deck 15 to engage the deflector dish, suggested by Scotty, and succeeds in freeing the ship. Then, a vicious energy tendril catches the section he is in, ripping away the outer hull and sucking him into the phenomenon. Scotty, Harriman and Chekov gather on Deck 15, solemnly realizing the loss of a great man. In the years following this, Scotty boards the USS Janolan en route to his retirement. It encounters a Dyson sphere, crash lands, and he comes up with the genius idea of hiding in the transporter buffer while a rescue mission is mounted. He is saved, though it's decades later, by the crew of the Enterprise. Upon hearing this, he delightedly exclaims that Jim Kirk himself must have taken the old ship out to save him. Several issues here. In the show, forgetting the event of the Enterprise B's maiden voyage seems like a hell of a thing to forget. It's possible that the decades spent in suspended animation may have contributed to this. Behind the scenes, however, both Star Trek Generation and Relics were written by Ronald D. Moore. This, unfortunately, seems to speak to someone not checking their notes before penning the second script. 5. The Klingon language. Mark Leonard, better known for playing Sarek in the original series and the later films, appeared on screen in 1979 as the captain of one of the three Klingon Kikinga-class battlecruisers that are zapped out of existence by V'ger. In these scenes, he speaks a Klingon dialect that was originated by James Doohan and then later expanded into a full language by linguist Mark Ockrent. This is generally accepted as the canon language for these ridge-headed aliens. Ronald D. Moore, who is the Klingon guy in Star Trek, he wrote many of the best Klingon episodes, has said that one shouldn't hold up a dictionary while listening to the Klingon language as it's being spoken in his episodes. He says that whether or not they use the official language is up to the writer, as jotting it down word for word is quite cumbersome. This may have been somewhat dismaying for Ockrent to hear. I mean, developing a language is hardly the easiest job in the world. 4. The Romulan cloaking device. Minefield. Minefield is a second season episode of Enterprise that depicts the Romulans as having access to cloaking technology. This episode is set almost 100 years prior to the early episode of Star Trek, Balance of Terror. In Balance of Terror, the cloaking device is depicted as being relatively new technology. Therefore, on screen, Romulans seem to have a very different definition of what new and old are. There is an explanation given for this, but it is not depicted in canon. Rather, the non-canon book, The Good That Men Do, explains that the bird of prey seen in Minefield were experimental ships, similar to the Klingon Bird of Prey in Star Trek VI. The experiments were deemed failures, and it would take a long time for the Romulans to perfect the technology. That is all well and good, but none of that is explained in the show. 3. The Trill species. The Trill species were introduced in Star Trek The Next Generation in the form of Ambassador O'Dan, the new love interest for Dr. Crusher. He neglects to tell her that the Trill are a joined species, and when the host is killed in a shuttle, the symbiont is transferred to Riker. Later, the symbiont is again transformed, but this time to a female host, something that causes issues of its own. There are a number of issues here that are quietly ignored by the Trill of Deep Space Nine. First, O'Dan was on the shuttle as he was worried about the effects of the transporter on the symbiont. Second, Crusher is able to move the symbiont from Riker and then to the next host with little to no effort, a feat that would be marveled in Deep Space Nine. Ezri Dax further makes a point of this by saying that she would have preferred to only be a temporary host, but once a host and symbiont are joined, that's the end of it. Lastly, the Trill get a complete appearance overhaul. This is due to Terry Farrell. She is such an attractive person that the producers didn't have the heart to cover her in the heavy Trill makeup for The Next Generation. Thus, the Spots were born. 2. Take us to Warp 13, Mr. Salamander. The Star Trek Voyager episode Threshold has many, many issues with the script. However, putting aside some of the obvious ones, let us look instead at the central plot of the episode, breaking the Warp 10 barrier. This actually goes back as far as The Next Generation. While the original series didn't have a set limit at the time, as the later shows would come to have, Roddenberry decided back in the early days of TNG that Warp 10 would be infinite velocity, meaning that to break this barrier, one would have to be everywhere in the universe at once. That's a bit of a jump from Warp 9.9, which is considerably slower than that. If it would take Voyager 75 years to get home at maximum speed, then breaking the Warp 10 barrier suggests that it works on an entirely different realm of physics. But if that's the case, how can the Enterprise D travel at speeds higher than Warp 10 in All Good Things? Now, clearly, the writers just wanted to suggest that the scale had been changed at this point. But even if that's the case, perhaps Threshold should have upped their number considerably. Unless Admiral Riker, Ambassador Picard, and the rest were all saved their inevitable salamander fate by the timely destruction of the ship in the Devron system. Who's to say? 1. Women can't be starship captains. Star Trek the original series' final episode, Turnabout Intruder, is simply not good. It is remembered more for the accident of becoming the last episode than being the intended final word of the show. However, due to the cancellation of Star Trek, the last words spoken in the original series are, "Her life could have been as rich as any woman's. If only. If only." This is after an episode where Dr. Janice Lester has been driven mad by the fact that she could never command a starship because she's a woman. Not a good look, Star Trek. Thankfully, this was quietly retconned by Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. The USS Saratoga is captained by a woman, played by Madge Sinclair, who would later go on to play Captain Sylva LaForge of the USS Hera. Turnabout Intruder is perhaps best viewed as an accident. Gene Roddenberry himself stated years later that there was no defense. The final line of the original series was simply a sexist statement.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.